I'd like to call the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee into session. It is 4:32 or 3. We're in the Senate Finance Committee. Mr. Clerk, could you call the roll?
Representative Osterman.
Here.
Representative Herron.
Here.
Representative Olson.
Here.
Representative Josephson.
Here.
Representative Stoltz. Representative Kawasaki.
Here.
Vice Chair Hawker.
Present.
Senator Meyer.
Here.
Senator Bishop.
Here.
Senator Diesel.
Here.
Senator Olson.
Here.
Senator Dunleavy. Chair Fairclough.
Here. We have a quorum. With that, if the committee members have reviewed the minutes, Representative Hawker.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from the LBNA meeting of March 28, 2013 be approved as presented.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the meeting minutes of March 28, 2013 are approved. Next, we'll be moving into executive sessions for the purpose of discussing confidential audit reports. Representative Hawker.
Madam Chair, I move the committee under Uniform Rule 22 go into executive session for the purposes of discussing confidential audit reports under Alaska Statutes 24.20.301.
Thank you. Are there any objections? We'll take a brief at ease while we clear the room. The auditors will stay with us. We're back on the record. It is 5:15. We are in the Senate Finance Committee. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee is returning from executive session. Just for the record, we have a quorum, the same quorum that we had at the table prior to going into executive session. I will note that legislators that joined us during the executive session were Speaker Chenault, Representative Guerra, Senator Stedman, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Christ-Tompkins, Representative Tuck, Representative Krutula, and Senator French. With that, we do have a quorum to continue doing business. Representative Hawker.
And Madam Chair, just for clarity of the record, I would note that Representative Chenault did leave the room prior to reconvening.
But that is absolutely true. At 4:58, he left the room.
Thank you, ma'am. But Madam Chair, I move the final following, pardon me, but Madam Chair, I move the following final audit report be released to the public. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority, Kinnick Arm Crossing Project.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is approved. The audit is released. Next on the agenda, we'll hear from the Department of Revenue on the process of oil and gas production tax audits. I'd like to welcome Deputy Commissioner Tangeman as well as Matthew Fonder to the mics.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue, and with me is Matt Fonder, Tax Director for the Tax Division.
Welcome. We have a request before the Budget and Audit Committee to perform an audit, and we wanted to provide an opportunity for you in representation of the department to talk about the processes that you go through. And enlighten the committee why we would or would not or should continue on with that request. Please.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to be before you. There are a lot of misconceptions, confusion apparently about what an audit is, what a financial audit is, what a performance audit is, and there's certainly two different animals. Some of the statements that have been made is that we're only auditing 2007, and I think it leads people to believe that we have absolutely no clue what happened in 2008, 2009, 2010, 11, and 12, and that could not be further from the truth. Mr. Fonder will walk us through a lot of detail in the vast amounts of information that the division, the department receive on a monthly basis, especially the oil tax is paid monthly. And we know a lot of information about what's happened in 2008 through the present. So just because a final audit hasn't been completed, the information that rolls up to that eventual final audit is in hand, has been analyzed, and we will proceed a lot quicker once we're through 2007. We're going to start combining years 2008 and 9. So we're going to walk through the details of what a financial audit is and what we do internally. Might want to talk a little bit about the difference between a performance audit and a financial audit also to clear that.
Deputy Commissioner Tangeman, will you be addressing the audit findings that have been made of the department in prior years? Or if you don't have those in your agenda, if they may be brought up. So I just want to give you a heads up as you go through if there's something there. It looks like a fairly dense presentation, but what's the will of the committee? Are we willing to listen to the entire presentation so that we can get through it expeditiously, or would you like to try to stop? Which my recommendation would be to go through the presentation as quickly as we can so that we can get to specific concerns, but I'm happy to accommodate a member. Okay, we will try to go through with no questions. If you could move, it is going on, it's 4:20 right now, so
okay.
I know that you want ample time to present.
And Madam Chair, we do have our assistant tax director online, Joanna Bales, as well as Lenny D's audit master, so they might be able to address some of the specific audit issues.
Thank
so
you.
I will turn it over to Mr. Fonder.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Fonder, and I'm the Director of the Tax Division for the Alaska Department of Revenue. As Deputy Commissioner Tangeman indicated, we tried to consolidate this into a simple step-by-step process to give everyone an idea of what our tax auditors go through on a monthly basis and on an annual basis when it comes to oil and gas production tax returns. So on slide two, this kind of lays out a high-level overview of our monthly processes that our auditors go through. Oil and gas producers are required to make monthly installment payments of estimated taxes and surcharges to the department. On top of that, explorers and producers are both required to submit monthly information reports to the department in accordance with our statutes and regulations. Our economic research group analyzes the monthly information reports that are submitted by taxpayers on a regular basis. This is the type of information that is often included in our revenue sources book. It's the information that we use to answer questions from legislators, media, and members of the public. We have some tax technicians in our audit group, and they review and document all information that is submitted by taxpayers each month. They also assist our accounting group to ensure that oil and gas revenues are properly accounted for and recorded every month as the payments come in. Slide three goes into the annual processes, and we just passed March 31st, so that's the big day for our production tax audit group each year. On March 31st is when the oil and gas tax filings, being the tax returns and other required information, are required to be received by the department. So if March 31st falls on a weekend or holiday, like it did this year, the filing is due on the next business day. So it wasn't a joke, but it was due on April 1st. The March 31st filing is a true-up of the 12 estimated monthly payments that had been received by the department through the previous year, which was the tax year that they filed the return for. When we get a tax return filed with us at the end of March or early April, they don't simply go on a desk or go in a file cabinet and wait for a few years before anyone looks at them. The tax filings undergo desk reviews by oil and gas production tax auditors when they are received. So right now we're in the process of assigning different tax filings with different auditors, and they are going through them, and it's not a day process, it's not a week process, it's a months long process. So our auditors are going to currently be reviewing the 2012 tax year audits that were filed, or production tax returns that were filed and they will be reviewing those for the next few months to make sure that the calculations have been done properly, that they have all the sufficient information that they need, that all the payments were received on time, and they go through and verify they go through and verify a lot of information before they set it aside before going forward on a full audit at a later date. Request for refunds of overpayments of an estimated tax. The state doesn't have to pay interest on those as long as they're refunded by the department within 90 days. So when a taxpayer files a return on March 31st, they may say, well, department, we paid you an extra $10 million, so we would like that back. So our auditors immediately take that and go through it line by line and make sure that the information is correct, and we need to make sure that we get that refund out by the end of June, so then the state of Alaska is not paying 11% interest on that refund. Moving on to slide 4 is where we get into the production tax audits and assessments. As the Deputy Commissioner indicated earlier, production tax audits are not like a performance audit. I believe you're all aware of the audit that, I believe it was legislative audit, that did a performance audit basically on the film tax credit program. From what I remember, it was half a dozen or so auditors for 6 months, and they came back with a report to the legislator on what the film tax program did for the state of Alaska. That is not what a production tax audit, that's not what the tax division does. And also, our production tax audits are not utilized to determine if any given statute is working. I mean, what is working, I guess, you know, and I think working is probably different in everyone's mind. The purpose of an oil and gas production tax audit is simply to ensure that the taxpayer has filed and paid the appropriate amount of production taxes as required by our statutes and regulations. Pursuant to AS 4355-075, the amount of tax imposed by this chapter must be assessed by the department within 6 years from when the return was filed. And it's important to note here that we often receive amended returns. And when we receive amended returns, that then starts the clock ticking for another 6 years on that specific issue, not on the entire audit, but on that specific issue. So for 2007, the year that we're currently trying to finalize all of our audits on, we received amended returns on 2007 as late as December of 2010. So some of those issues in the 2007 audits, we technically have until the end of 2016 to complete. Taxpayers are also required to file those amended returns if a decision of a regulatory body like FERC or a court like Superior Court or Alaska Supreme Court affects a previous return. Of course, like always, taxpayers have the right to appeal the results of our audit assessment, and those appeal processes start within the tax division. Generally speaking, our oil and gas production tax assessments have ranged from a refund of $5 million to an assessment of $82.5 million over the last 5 years. For comparison purposes, in the year that we assessed $82.5 million was FY11. In that year, we collected over $4.5 billion in production tax revenues. So the assessments for FY11 were less than 2% of the total production tax revenues received for that year. Going on to slide 5, as many of you know, we do have some pretty high interest rates here on late payments of taxes here in Alaska, and due to those interest and penalty provisions, there's a huge incentive for taxpayers to be as accurate as possible on their estimated monthly payments and their tax return filings. If the department issues an assessment, it's usually because the taxpayer and the department simply have a disagreement or a difference of opinion as to how the statutes apply to a certain set of facts. As I stated earlier, if an assessment is issued, it is then subject to the appeals process, which starts in the tax division and can go all the way up to the Alaska Supreme Court. So it could take months, it could take years. On slide 6, we go into the credit processes. There's no set time frame for when we need to receive a credit application, so we don't have a busy time like March 31st like we do with production taxes. We're constantly working on credit applications throughout the year. All of our tax credit applications, which is where we feel that the state of Alaska has the most exposure, undergo a due diligence review prior to granting the credit. It's important to note for everyone here that the due diligence reviews are often as detailed as a full audit. However, we do retain the right to perform a full audit at a later date if we choose to or if we receive information that leads us to believe that we need to. It's also important to note that all alternative credits for oil and gas exploration under 025 undergo a full audit prior to being issued. So we do an entire audit on those before we send any money out the door. And expenditures which support credits that have been applied against a tax liability, those are audited at the time of the tax return. Moving on to slide 7 is where we get into taxpayer confidentiality. And pursuant to our statutes, the tax division is required to hold all taxpayer information confidential. And due to those confidentiality restrictions, we're unable to discuss any specific information that is contained in any given audit or assessment. The statutes do, however, allow us to release certain information so long as it is aggregated amongst three or more taxpayers. And we do that every year in both our revenue sources book and our annual report. The tax division has indicated several times in different committees that we are allowed to share taxpayer-specific information with the legislature, and so audit information we would be able to share in executive session as long as the necessary confidentiality agreements are taken care of. To date, to my knowledge, I guess no one has taken us up on this offer. Slide 8 gets into audit effectiveness, and Madam Chair, from here on out is where we tried to kind of address the points that were brought up in the request for the audit of our auditors. So in regards...
Could you pause for just a moment? I'm trying to see Senator French. I don't see him in the room, and he stepped out. That was... I just was trying to let him see what... or make sure he was listening to why we were actually here. Oh.
Welcome to the club.
We'll just pause for a moment. Oh, brief at ease.
No problem.
Back on the record, if you could restate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just informing you and the rest of the committee that from slide 8 on is where we tried to address the points that were brought up in the request that is before the committee today.
Thank you.
Slide 8 talks about audit effectiveness. The tax division does conduct a full audit on each and every production tax return that is filed where the taxpayer has a tax liability. As I stated earlier, we also conduct full audits of all exploration claims before we issue a credit certificate. Timeliness of ACE's audits, I guess, in our opinion, is not really an issue. We have 6 years to conduct the audit, and to date, we have yet to miss a statutory deadline. Although we only had 3 years under ELF to audit those filings, it's my understanding that it oftentimes took longer than 3 years, and taxpayers agreed to extend the statute of limitations in those circumstances. And I wasn't here at the time, but it's my understanding that this was one of the reasons why in 2007 the legislature changed the statute of limitations from 3 years to 6 years on production tax audits. In regards to the level of assessment, you know, as director of the tax division, I would love to see low assessments every year. Low assessments are good things. It's not a good thing to be consistently issuing large assessments against any group of taxpayers. A lower level of assessment signifies a better understanding of the tax system and or better voluntary compliance by taxpayers. And that applies to any type of tax, whether it's corporate income tax, mining license tax, fisheries taxes. That applies across the board. Moving on to slide 9, talks about some of the difficulties or impediments of the ACEs and PPT audits. And one of the biggest things is simply the amount of data that we receive and that we review. Under ELF, this is a very high level kind of just calculation of what it took for us to, what the type of information we received and looked at under ELF. So to get the gross value at the point of production, GVPP, you simply took taxable volume times taxable value. Taxable value was the destination value, and you subtracted out marine tanker cost, tax and other pipeline tariffs and costs, and quality bank adjustments. Once you got to GVPP, you simply multiplied that times the ELF rate, which was a number less than one. multiplied that times the tax rate, and then you had your monthly production tax. You subtract out any credits and add in the conservation surcharges, and you had the total tax due. So it was relatively simple. Moving on to slide 10, it gets into the amount of data that we receive under ACES, and this is the simplified tax calculation under ACES, where you start out very similar. GVPP is taxable volume times taxable value. Taxable value is defined as the volume of taxable oil and gas produced times the wellhead value, which is basically the sales price minus the transportation costs and quality bank adjustments. Once you get your GVPP number, you subtract out 1/12 of the total annual lease expenditures, which is the CapEx and OpEx, and that gives you your monthly production tax value, which is what we use to calculate the monthly progressivity when PTV is greater than $30 a barrel. Once you have the monthly PTV, you take that times the base tax rate, and that gives you your base tax. And then you take your monthly progressivity plus the base tax to get your monthly production tax that is due. You take your monthly production tax that's due, subtract out the credits, and that gives you your annual tax. And you add in your conservation surcharges, and that gives you the total tax due under ACES. The next few slides just give you an idea of the types of data that our auditors receive and review and look at when they're going through an ACES audit. As I said earlier, lease expenditures are probably one of the biggest things, one of the biggest changes, and that's where most of the information comes from in the ACES audits. Our audit staff obtain information on lease expenditures from numerous sources through the audit process. The first step is through the taxpayer's accounting system. Not all taxpayers have joint interest billings or joint account data exchange data. However, all taxpayers have accounting systems where they maintain the necessary information to file their tax returns, and that's the first step. If our auditors are looking for information for their audit, we know that they can always go back to the taxpayer's accounting system. We also receive joint interest billings and review those through the audit process. Taxpayers that are working interest owners in a unit receive monthly JIBs from the unit operator. The JIBs are detailed billings of all expenditures that were made in any month during the month in a unit. The taxpayers will submit the JIBs that they receive from unit operators to the tax division each month. A monthly JIB can be up to 300 pages in length, depending on the size of the project. There are also exclusions and adjustments to the JIB, so certain expenditures that are not allowed as lease expenditures under our statutes. Each taxpayer does exclude certain expenditures from the JIBs, and they make additional adjustments to build expenditures in accordance with their interpretation of our statutes. The taxpayer's claimed expenditures are then reconciled to their own books and records, and some taxpayers do provide us detailed information about the exclusions with our audit staff, but other taxpayers choose not to. They simply believe that they don't need to provide the department with documentation of something that wasn't claimed on their tax return. So in those instances, trying to reconcile the claimed expenditures from the JIBs to the taxpayer's accounting system back to the tax return does become a time-consuming process. Moving on to slide 13, talks about the joint account data exchange, and this data is captured and is sent electronically by the unit operator to each working interest owner. It contains references to source documents of the operator and is sometimes provided by the taxpayer in support of lease expenditures that are claimed. Annual JIB data for a taxpayer may contain millions of lines of data for one unit, so just another example of the sheer volumes of data that we receive along with tax returns under ACES. Authorizations for expenditures, or AFEs. These documents are also referred to as cost center projects. AFEs provide project descriptions which help the auditors determine where to focus their audit resources. While the AFEs are not voluminous individually, there may be hundreds of AFEs or cost center projects underway in a unit during an audit period. Moving on to slide 14. Invoices that are in support of claimed expenditures. Our auditors do examine invoices or invoice listings to identify lease expenditures that are not allowable under our statutes. Again, the volume of claimed expenditures for large units is often in excess of 1 million transactions. We do receive data from other state agencies through the audit process as well. We receive plans of development and plans of operation. Our auditors do review both of those that are on file with the Department of Natural Resources for taxpayer projects that are going on during an audit year. Some of those documents will lead the auditor to other documents that may be in DNR's possession that are filed by the taxpayer that may contain elements of excluded costs as well. Moving on to slide 15, we receive data from the Department of Environmental Conservation. Information is obtained from DEC regarding spills and unplanned releases of hazardous substances, and the information is used by our auditors in cost and project analysis. And it is manually incorporated. That information is manually incorporated into our audit work papers. We also receive volume data from the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or AOGCC. And although the audit of lease expenditures typically does not include a reconciliation of taxable volumes, swings in production between months or in any given month will assist our auditors in identifying conditions that may have caused a jump in expenditures that may be excluded under our statutes. Slide 16 is kind of the summary of the impediments and difficulties of ACE's audits. Number one, you've heard from your own consultants, many other consultants, and many in the industry that ACES is a complex tax, so the complexity of the tax is difficult. And it was a new tax back in 2007, and the department did not have any institutional knowledge that we could tap into, so we had to train our auditors and read through the statutes and interpret them and get everyone up to speed all at the same time. Over the course of the last 5 years, there have been changes that have been made to our statutes and regulations each year since ACES was implemented, so it's always been a moving target, so things change every year as our audit staff are working through. And in addition, it's not just audits that our audit staff do. They perform a lot of functions within the tax division, and towards the end of slide 16 is just some examples of some of the duties that our auditors are also tasked with. As I said earlier, they conduct desk reviews of all tax return filings. They report, or they generate credit reports on a monthly basis for our economic research group and for DNR and other outside agencies. They do the due diligence reviews of all credit applications. We process cash purchase requests for credits on a regular basis. We provide support on annual legislative audits. Legislative audit does come in and audit the tax division and does audit our production tax audit staff every year. We're constantly updating our processes for changes in the law, and we're working towards a new integrated revenue management system, so we're gearing up for that. We work with DNR for exploration projects and share information with them. We assist our legal staff and others in the regulations writing process, develop and test new systems. We're calculating gas prevailing values on a quarterly basis and ANS prevailing values on an annual basis. So they're a very busy group of people, and I'm very fortunate to have a good group of people to work with, and I really do appreciate all the hard work that they do. Slide 17 will give you a snapshot of what our production tax audit group looks like. We have a total of 19 FTEs in our production tax audit group, and of those 19 FTEs, there are 3 supervisors and 8 auditors that are dedicated strictly to production tax audits, 6 auditors that are dedicated to credit audits, and 2 tax technicians. Our auditors range from an oil and gas revenue auditor 1 or an OGRA 1 to an OGRA 4. Just to give you an idea, the starting pay for an OGRA 1 is just over $60,000 a year. The starting pay for an OGRA 4 is just over $91,000 a year. And all that information, the salary schedules, can be found at the website on that screen. The average years of oil and gas production tax audit experience in our group is 5.5 years for the production tax group, and for just over 4 years for the credit group. It's important to note that many of our auditors have audit experience outside of oil and gas production tax, but this is strictly limited to their experience with oil and gas production tax auditing. I won't read through the entire slide 18, but this will give you an idea of the minimum qualifications for an oil and gas revenue auditor one. They need to have a bachelor's degree or a CPA, or they could substitute a bachelor's degree and at least 1 year of professional experience in auditing or examining financial information, or 2 years of journey level technical experience performing technical tax, accounting, or audit functions in the examination, verification, maintenance, reconciliation, and reporting of accounts. On slide 19, this is the same type of information for oil and gas revenue auditor 4 position. This is our highest level auditor position. They're required to have a bachelor's degree and at least 2 years of professional experience auditing and examining financial information that is specific to the oil and gas industry. They can substitute a bachelor's degree and 3 years of professional experience, and they have to possess a CPA, or the CPA could substitute for education, but it's important to note that there's no substitution for the required experience. So the only way that you can become an oil and gas revenue auditor 4 is if you have, at a minimum, 2 years of professional experience auditing and examining data specific to the oil and gas industry. Moving on to slide 20, this is simply to give you a snapshot of what it looked like prior to ACES. For comparison purposes, this was what our audit group looked like back in the ELF days. We had a total of 9 FTEs, which we're now up to 19. We had 1 supervisor, 6 production tax auditors, 0 credit auditors, and 2 tax technicians. Prior to PPT, our production tax auditors had an average of over 18 years of oil and gas production tax audit experience. And due to attrition, retirement, and transfers to other departments in 2006, our production tax audit group experienced nearly a 100% turnover in auditors. I believe we maintained 1 auditor in 2006 that stayed with us, and then we just had to start all over. Slide 21 will give you an idea of the audit methodology. Production tax audit methodology under ACES is unique, but audit methodology is going to bear similarities to the methodologies that are used in other tax types. This is just a very, very high level idea of what the process that our auditors will go through. So first, they determine if the producers and explorers have complied with monthly and annual reporting requirements for the tax year in question. Next, they will ensure that all the necessary monthly installment payments have been made on a timely basis. Third, they will verify that each taxpayer's tax liability has been properly calculated. Fourth, they will confirm that sufficient documentation exists to support claims made on the tax return. And finally, when appropriate, our production tax audit staff will issue an audit assessment well within the statute of limitations and in accordance with our statutes and regulations. On slide 22, we'll give you an idea of where we're at, or the status of the audits. You've probably heard this a few times already this year, but we're currently in the process of finalizing our audits for the 2007 tax year. Those returns were initially filed on March 31st, 2008, and as I indicated earlier, there have been numerous amended returns for the 2007 tax year. Part of the complexity of the 2007 tax year, and for auditing purposes especially, is that half of the year is under PPT and the other half is under ACES. We do anticipate having all of the 2007 audits finalized by late summer or early fall this year, well within the statute of limitations. Our staff have started working on audits for 2008-2009 tax years for those taxpayers whose 2007 audits have been completed. We also anticipate that going forward, we will be able to cover 2 tax years at once. So for instance, we're starting to combine the 2008 and 2009 tax years into 1 audit as our resources allow. Slide 23 is a summary. And you know, ACES, as you've heard, is a unique and complex tax type, consists of both taxes and credits. Because of that, we've split our auditors into 2 groups, one that audits the tax and one that audits the credits. Large amounts of data that we receive must be reviewed manually. We currently don't have a system, but we are in the process of implementing that system, and we're anticipating that the oil and gas portion of the system. We'll start implementation in about a year, but it'll take a little more time after that. But we do believe that that will help speed up things. It'll make the review process much smoother, simpler, and cleaner for our auditors. There have been changes, as I said earlier, with all the changes in statutes to the regulations throughout the years, we routinely conduct in-house training and workshops to keep our auditors and taxpayers up to date on all the statutory and regulatory changes that have been made. We do our best to provide as much industry-related training for our audit staff as our budget allows. Our staff are active in both the Federation of Tax Administrators and the Multi-State Tax Commission, and we do continue to refine our audit policies and procedures as audit issues are identified. And that concludes my presentation, Madam Chair, so I would be happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Botter. Any questions from committee members? Representative Herron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two small questions. Slide 3. March 31st is the true-up built bullet. Is historically, they're all on time.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, yes, we really don't have any issues with late filers for the most part.
Madam Chair, one more question. On the fourth bullet on page 4, the six-year bullet, should that be reconsidered or reviewed, whether that should be changed?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I'd like to address that one.
Mr. Tangeman, could you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner. We are within the six-year time frame. We're comfortable with that, and we see with the new taxes or the new revenue management system coming online, plus the experience we've developed over the last several years, that we will be speeding the process up. So we're comfortable with the 6 years at this point.
Representative Herron, anything else?
So should we reconsider that statutory requirement in a year, 2 years, maybe lower it, or just keep it the same?
I think it's something that could be looked at in the future, but we're comfortable where we are today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tangeman. Representative Josephson?
Thank you. With my apologies, your name again?
Matt Fonder.
Mr. Fonder, first of all, thank you for your presentation. In a couple places in slide 21 and 22, you said that you're comfortable, you're within the statute of limitations. And I guess my question is, even though there were the amendments and that restarts the clock, as you said, it seems like we're pushing the envelope a little bit, that we're using the entire 6 years. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we, at the end of the summer, well, actually, the six-year statute of limitations on our 2007 tax year, which was filed in March of 2008, is March of 2013. So if we're able to complete, or I'm sorry, yes, 2014, so next March. So if we're able to complete all of our audits by the end of summer or early fall, we were able to do that. We're hoping if we do that by then, it'll be within 6 months of the deadline. And yes, while it is getting close to the 6 years, it is not over the time, like I indicated earlier, which was under ELF, we were often over the statute of limitations, but the taxpayers simply agreed to waive it to get through all of the audit items.
And I'd like to add one thing.
Thank you, Mr. Fodder. Mr. Tangeman, again, when we change speakers, just for the clerks, we try to let them know.
Bruce Tangeman. Just to add one additional thing. Obviously, when we went from a gross tax to a net tax, that's a huge change in the way you do business. And an option could have been throw a lot of new positions at it. I've only been in this job since December of 2010, and I'm pretty amazed that we've been within that six-year window the entire time. All our processes have been manual up to this point. We're starting the revenue management system, which is going to be like going from 19th century to 21st century for us. So that's going to be a huge lift. So I think it's quite impressive that we've lived within that six-year. Granted, it was at the back end of the 6 years, but we've never missed a deadline. And again, as we've gotten more experience under our belt, we are stepping it up a little bit. So we would certainly like to be further ahead in the process. But if they're due on March 31st, they're never going to be done within 2 months. So you're automatically going to have a lag of 6 months or a year, even if you are on top of it and stepping on them fairly quickly. So.
Representative Josephson.
Yeah, just a couple more questions. For Mr. Fodder, the under ELF, there was litigation, there were complicated hearings, both for tax and royalty. There was a lot of dispute about the ELF returns. So ELF wasn't necessarily the easy route to get these returns done, was it? Is that?
Madam Chair, for the record, again, Matt Fonder, the Director of the Tax Division, and I believe we have Lenny Dees online. I wasn't around during the ELF time. I don't believe Lenny was with the department, but he may have some further information on that, but I don't have any off the top of my head.
Mr. Dees, are you available?
Hello. Through the chair, this is Lenny Dees, Audit Master with the Department of Revenue. And if I could have the question repeated so I make sure I...
Sure. The question was essentially in the time frame from around 1987 through the mid-90s, there was constant litigation, administrative hearings, general counsel hired two firms in Anchorage, outside counsel from California. ELF was not necessarily a perfect streamlined auditing process. Is that fair? It's a loaded question.
Through the chair, as Mr. Fonder mentioned, I was not around during those audits, but I think there were some of the disagreements and litigation were surrounding specific issues that didn't have so much to do with, you know, the tax return. Had to do more with how, say, for instance, litigation over tariff rates and litigation over how the ELF itself was calculated. If I had to compare the two systems, the complexities of the two systems, I mean, I think ACES is by far more complex because there's a lot more moving parts. To me, ACES is taking ELF and then stacking on a net tax component to it. So it just adds to the complexity, and it adds to the number of issues that can be contested during an audit. So I wouldn't say that, in my own personal opinion, and not being around then, but I wouldn't say that ELF was as complex.
Thank you, Mr. Dees. Any other questions, Representative Josephson?
Well, I guess I would ask Mr. Fonder, are you comfortable that your division, when you need more help, is getting that help? And I ask that because this has come up in the subcommittee phase. I know as a former prosecutor that help was needed and the departments sometimes were reluctant to even go there. Do you feel comfortable through your commissioner and staff to ask for the help you need?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe that there are a couple positions that were proposed in the governor's budget this year for FY14. So I do feel comfortable that we have been given the resources that we need, and if we are given a couple more audit positions, I believe that that would also help us move forward more efficiently.
Thank you.
And for the record, Bruce Tangeman, again, those positions were one more audit master and one more oil and gas auditor. And also in the revenue management system capital budget, there were five part-time temporary positions, I guess, to assist with the transition. We're going to be standing up 22 different tax types as we roll this thing out. So we've got some assistance there also to bridge the gap.
Deputy Commissioner Tangeman, were those funded on both sides in the legislative cycle, or are those under review still?
Madam Chair, they are the they were not funded equally on both sides, so I believe it will be a conference committee issue in order to get those in.
Thank you, Mr. Tangeman. We're going to lose Representative Osterman in just a few minutes. House Finance is getting ready to start back up. I greatly appreciate House Finance pausing to allow members to attend. Representative Osterman will stay with us as long as possible. I know others are trying to leave for the day, too. It is getting close to 6. We had scheduled an hour and a half. Are there other questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just briefly, Matt, I can feel your pain on trying to keep a crew as being a former commissioner and competing on salary. I know that this legislature funded or increased funding for auditors here several years ago for your division, and do you think that's working in keeping this new group around, and maybe we can get back to that 18 years of experience?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, again, my name is Matt Fonder, and I'm the director of the tax division, and, you know, I sure hope so. Like any business or state government entity, we're going to lose staff for different reasons, whether it's health reasons, retirement, simply moving back to be closer to their family. We do lose staff, and when we lose, you know, two auditors, for instance, in a year, that's 25% of our audit staff. The folks that we have around now are, I'd like to say that I'd like to see them all in 5 years, and I hope that they're there, and I really do, but it's really hard to tell. I mean, it is hard to compete with the private industry when it comes to that. So when, like many state agencies, as you probably know, Senator Bishop, state government is often the training grounds for private industry.
Senator Bishop, any follow-up?
If I could add one more thing, this is Bruce Tangeman.
Thank you.
When the commissioner and I did start late 2010, we had several vacancies. The chief economist was vacant, the assistant chief economist was vacant, the tax director position was vacant. I know I'm missing a few because we had at least
master auditor.
Yes, one of the audit masters was vacant. So we're fully staffed now. And again, it's how long will that last? We have been staffed for a few months, and I don't know if we've been fully staffed for quite some time. So it is a different position, and we're happy to be where we're at right now.
Thank you, Mr. Tangeman. Representative Hawker.
Thank you, ma'am. We're here because our state auditor, in conducting the statewide single audit, identified for like about the, I mean, since, well, let's put it this way, since fiscal year 08, the internal accounting and audit controls over production taxes in the Department of Revenue have been identified as a significant internal accounting control deficiency, recognizing, I'll first say, you all weren't there. But I will say that turnover, as it's been discussed, is usually a huge indicator of larger systemic problems. But I would ask, on recommendation 5 of our statewide single audit for 2013, which you probably don't want me to read any of the language in this, the agency agreed with the legislative auditor's position. Do you still agree with the legislative auditor's position that the agency needs to improve and implement controls, if I might actually state it exactly, that the Department of Revenue's commissioner should ensure staff within its tax division implement controls to improve auditing oil and gas severance tax revenues?
Deputy Commissioner Tangeman.
Mr. Hawker, Representative Hawker, we do agree with that, absolutely.
And if I might continue with that, with all respect to me, and I can assure you that my interest in auditing procedures at Department of Revenue are probably 180 degrees from Senator French's, but I have personal serious concerns with both what it appears to be of technical areas of perhaps less than appropriate audit procedures. If I might cite this one, assessment of related audit files found that supervisory reviews by the audit tax master were not documented and the audit supervisor review checklist was not consistently completed. I mean, these are some of the most fundamental processes and procedures. I mean, you can kind of go through this about the things that need to be implemented. To me, are like the most foundational elements of an audit process. So I have great concerns. Do you have, as an agency, is your audit team peer-reviewed by anyone other than the state auditor in the completion of the statewide single audit?
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, again, my name is Matt Fonder. I'm the director of the tax division. To my knowledge, we're not peer-reviewed by anyone outside of legislative audit. But as I indicated in my presentation, we are audited, as you know, by legislative audit annually.
And Madam Chair, if I might briefly.
Representative Hawker.
And I can tell you, I understand you weren't here, but I remember sitting as a finance committee member at the other end of the building back in 2007, receiving absolute assurance from the commissioner and the tax director at the time that there would be no problem meeting both the obligation to write regulations or to complete audits on schedule for ACES. So respectfully, although you inherited the job, that falls on very deaf ears with me. When especially we have been identifying through our state auditor these deficiencies ongoing for years, and the fact that you're not peer reviewed, I'd also add that we had a little conversation with a bunch of your auditors about 1 a.m. the other morning in the House Resources Committee, that I found that some of their responses, quite frankly, absolutely inaccurate and of great concern to me, especially words like you want to write your own rules. Last thing I knew, the legislature wrote the rules. I'm very concerned about how the agency has interpreted and implemented and utilized JIBS in conducting an audit process and the reliance upon other auditors. I'm very concerned about how you have implemented your own regulations regarding to transportation costs and determining wellhead netback. And in the fact, again, that we have not had any peer review outside of our state auditor, who finds consistently problems with your agency since FY08, I'm quite frankly wondering if we shouldn't request a very, very serious peer review of your agency.
Deputy Commissioner Tangeman.
Through the chair, Representative Hawker, again, I would go back to the massive changes that this state and this department undertook starting in 2006 and 2007 when we went from a gross tax to a net tax. We were completely changing the process. We had no regulations in place. We had a staff that had never worked under this system. Since then, we've implemented over 70 regulations. We've stayed within the statutory window, and improvements are being made. I wouldn't expect us, I hope you wouldn't expect us, to correct this in a year, but since 2007-2008, the time frame you're addressing, we've made huge strides. And again, this was done on manual systems, spreadsheets, PowerPoint or PDFs, those types of things. So we accept the issues that have been laid before us by a ledge audit, but we are also entering a new age when we will have a revenue management system in place into the future, which will alleviate a lot of these issues. Obviously, when you're dealing with millions of lines of data manually and in spreadsheets, an automated system will certainly help with that process. So while we understand your concern, we certainly accept the analysis and what Ledge Audit has presented. We see a light at the end of the tunnel, and we do believe we're moving in the right direction, sir.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, ma'am. And again, Bruce, you and I have worked together a long time, and we'll respectfully agree to disagree, but I believe the issue has to do with, in my concern, more with audit procedures. And quite frankly, a lot of those problems, I think, do come from the high turnover, the absolute lack of in-depth experience in the staff in that agency. Which, you know, and anyone who fears an audit probably needs to be audited. You know that line. Mm-hmm. And then the other question is always, who audits the auditor? And that's what a peer review is. Mm-hmm. But any business that is afraid of an audit, quite frankly, probably needs to be audited.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Any other questions from committee members? My thought process is to bring Senator French up. I'd like to review his request. Certainly, we've heard about turnover and manual entries and the need for technology to move this department forward, that they're in the process of implementing that, but there's still appears to be some concerns about how to go forward. So thank you so much for your presentation. Thank you for your hard work for the people of Alaska. I understand your audits are still within the time frame required, and if there's something we can do to assist you, this committee is here to hear what those things are and to try to assist the department in working for the people of Alaska. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Member.
Senator French, if I could have you come forward for the committee, you should have a February 13th letter in your packet. Specifically, Senator French was asking for us to approve an audit that would identify the effectiveness of the Department of Revenue's audit function in terms of audit coverage, levels of assessment, and timeliness when compared the audit function under the prior tax structure, ELF. In addition, he identified impediments to the process of auditing ACES and PPT returns and make recommendations for improvement, asking us to consider examination of the professional qualifications and expert levels of DOR's audit staff and determine if resources are sufficient to fulfill audit requirements. Examine the tax division's methodology for conducting audits and determine if the agency is following industry best practices. What I'd like you to do as committee members, while Senator French speaks, if there's any one of those particular items that has been addressed or still remains a concern to audit committee members, that's what I'd like to know as we try to move forward. Senator French, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I seem to be coming down with a cold this afternoon. Maybe I share it with my next-door neighbor, Representative Hawker. I hope it doesn't bode. I hope the plague I have doesn't spill over onto my request. I guess I'll just start by saying that I think it's probably fair to say that the Tax Division looks forward to an audit with the same degree of enthusiasm that any one of us would if we were being audited. That is to say, they'd prefer we didn't. I think that's just a human reaction. And I guess I also want to say I hope that there's no sense here that I have any animosity or suspicion about the Tax Division. I don't. At 19 employees, those individuals are literally worth their weight in gold. They perform a hugely important function. They serve as the sort of the over, you know, they're the nerve center of the state's resources and revenues, and I want them to have the tools they need to succeed. But I think Representative Hawker also pointed out that there's been consistent findings of significant deficiencies in that audit division for some time, and I believe that the way to help them improve is to have our professionals look over their shoulders, review their practices, and deliver some recommendations. I think it's just probably as simple as that. The finding, for example, that there was one assessment that came in that required an $82 million adjustment, so, that's a huge amount of money. $82 million is no small amount of money to go one way or the other on. My district would love to get that money. Your district would. Anybody's district would love to see that kind of change in revenue. And so I think really for the reasons that are set forth in the letter, and I'll just remind the committee that I was assisted in the crafting of that request by our auditor, by Ms. Curtis. She was helpful, and I appreciate that, to sort of target it, not at whether or not ACES is working or PPT worked or ELF worked. You can be for this tax we have now, or you can be against it and still want to make sure that we're getting an accurate process happening at the Tax Division. And so I think that's really the sum and substance of my request.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Herron.
Madam Chair, just one that's appropriate for comment, not a question.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Seeing no questions, thank you, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hawker.
And I am obviously sharing Senator French's cold here today, and my ears are about half plugged. Did I hear you say, with apologies, did you work with Ms. Curtis in developing these audit objectives?
Absolutely. I appreciate the request, and it came to me because of a meeting I attended, I think, just as we were ending this last LB&A committee. I may have been the last committee I attended, but when I think it was, his name is escaping me, but he had an audit request in, and it was, you know, sort of came out in the debate that he'd worked with Ms. Curtis, and I've been thinking about an audit along these lines, but realized how much benefit you'd get by doing that. And so she came to my office, we bounced some ideas back and forth, and so I was happy to have her assistance.
Thank you, Senator French. Representative Herron, did you want to make a comment with Senator French at the table, or is
No, that's at the table. I just want to comment that our resident CPA brought up a good point, and I just hope that it's part of the audit review is that we take a look at JIBS. There's a few legislators that are concerned about it, and so it was brought up. That's all.
Thank you, Representative Herron. And joint interest billing. Thank you, just for those that might be listening at home. Thank you, Senator French, for bringing this issue to the attention of the committee. Ms. Curtis, could you join us at the microphone?
For the record, Chris Curtis, legislative auditor.
Thank you. We talked earlier about the workload, and I believe you indicated that the department was able, at least in a timely manner, to be able to take on this project after your statewide single audit was complete. Is that correct? So could you put on the record a timeline for if we went this direction, what you would do?
Senator Fairclough, we have a staffing meeting this next week to assign staff to statewide single audit 13. And we do go into the division every year and audit them. And it would be most efficient if we could conduct the special performance audit at the same time. I can't guarantee that would be possible with resources right now. I should know within a week when we do the planning what would be the assignments. But it would be my intent to have them, the special audit and the financial portion, occur at the same time. But I can't right now commit to that.
Thank you. Ms. Curtis, would the committee see something? I'm trying to reach back to our last meeting sometime in February of next year. I don't remember if that was the date that we had talked about. Committee members, please help me. Or Ms. Curtis, if you could.
Senator Fairclough, if we can conduct the performance audit at the same time, we should be ready to bring a performance audit to the committee at the beginning of the next session.
Okay.
Sometime around February. If we cannot, then we will most likely miss that.
So thank you, Ms. Curtis. What is the will of the committee? Do we see need to continue forward? If I could just have some comments or direction. I guess as a chairman, I think that there's been enough issues raised that certainly a partnership could be beneficial to everyone. But is there comments from committee members?
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Representative Hawker.
Madam Chair, I move we approve Senator French's request for an audit of the Department of Revenue's oil and gas production tax audit process. And if I might just add to that, in accordance with the memorandum that we have been provided outlining audit objectives.
Is there objections from committee members? I'll object, Ms. Curtis, did you have a comment?
I would like some direction from the committee as far as officially adding JIB to the request. Does the committee's wish that we pay specific attention to how, not really understanding what JIB is, but to give that direction to the audit team to make sure we pay specific attention to that.
Representative Hawker, we're under objection. Could you speak to that for a moment, and then we'll step back if we need to.
And Madam Chair, speaking at least for a couple of us here, this would fall under looking at best audit practices. And I very much would like you to look at the agency's policies and procedures for the utilization of joint interest billings in accordance with statute. I would ask that you, in your overall examination of the audit, look to see if the agency is overstepping its bounds in its interpretation of their responsibilities under statute.
Senator French, is that consistent? Is that derailed your request? Is it was your requesting originally?
I don't think it's contrary to any of the specific requests I've made. It's just in addition to is the way I take the.
It is an addition. Thank you, Senator French. So we have that recorded in our meeting minutes, and we'll take that as Mr. Hawker, Representative Hawker, as an amendment to the original proposal and include that. Is there any objections to? I'll remove my objection, and that motion is adopted. Is there any other business to come before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee? With that, I appreciate everyone's attendance and patience in product. Thank you very much. It is 6:20, and we're adjourned.